I'm your afternoon concert host, Garrett McQueen, and today I'm here with world-renowned violinist Georg Schmidt, who will be performing Vivaldi's The Four Seasons with the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra in our October Masterworks performance tonight and tomorrow night at the Tennessee Theater. Thank you for being with me today.
It's good to be with you.
So I understand you come from a very musical family. Tell me a little bit about your musical upbringing and development as a musician from such an early age.
Yeah, music is our family value, to say the least. My mother is a cellist and a pianist. My father's a violinist and was my first teacher. Growing up in Philadelphia, my parents played in the Philadelphia Opera Company. So actually on some nights when they couldn't get a babysitter, they snuck me into the pit.
Oh,
and
nice.
I even conducted along.
Oh, wow.
So I actually grew up very much with opera.
Oh, okay.
And hearing great singers. And so I think in many ways it kind of influenced my violin playing as a kid. I started playing when I was four. So it's been kind of a, you know, it's been a part of me for, I'm 33 now. So it's been a part of me for a long time. And growing up in a musical family was not without its challenges.
Of course.
I wanted to be very much a regular kid. In the sense of friends and mall and hip hop was actually the music of choice.
Oh, nice.
And growing up in Philly, it was kind of like East Coast hip hop, you know, Wu-Tang and Biggie and all that was kind of my flavor more so than Mozart and Bach, believe
nice.
It or not. And so it took me until about 15, 16 to kind of get serious with the violin. Serious meaning that you start to understand that the work that you put in yields results. And so there was a lot of pressure at home because I never wanted to practice, you know, and there was...
Well, who does?
Yeah, you know, and there was bribery, like for back to school. Like if, you know, I'd say like I want a pair of Air Jordans for back to school sneakers, you know, and my dad was like, if you practice 4 hours a day for the month of August, you'll get those kickadees.
Nice, nice.
So, you know, stuff like that. So I have no... sort of qualms in telling kids that, you know, bribery is okay if
right.
it gets you to practice.
I suppose so. So did you always know that you'd become a professional violinist or was there some miraculous event that led you toward it?
It was probably a series of events. I actually wanted your job for a little while. I wanted to be...
You wanted to be a bassoonist.
I wanted to be a bassoonist. No, I wanted to be in radio.
Okay.
I actually, as a kid, I had my own tape recorder, and I recorded sort of a mock radio show of classical music. I wanted to be like a classical DJ. And so, but I knew I always wanted to... I knew I was always going to be around music in some way.
Right, right.
That was without question, and it was sort of a series of events that basically gave me confidence in terms of other people, teachers and who later became mentors that saw something in me that I think I didn't. And most young people need that. They need somebody to say to them, you've got something that I think is worth investing in and is worth exploring. And if you, you know, practice hard and dedicate yourself, something good might come out of it.
Definitely. Now, who were some of those teachers and mentors?
Well, I was very fortunate to meet probably two of the greatest living violinists today in Itzhak Perlman and Pinchas Zukerman.
Oh, nice.
And so those two guys have been great influences in my life through different times. I met Zukerman first when I was in my sort of early teens, like 13, 14, and I worked with his very close associate who's a teacher at the Manhattan School of Music.
Oh,
and
wow,
through
nice.
Her, she also had an association with Itzhak Perlman and his summer music program for young, talented kids in mm-hmm. Long Island, New York. And so I got to Perlman through her, a lady called Patty Kopeck, and she's a wonderful teacher and still somebody I'm very close with today. And so that kind of unlocked the door for me in New York, which became kind of eye-opening and sort of an unrolling of the carpet, so to speak, in terms of having access to things that I never had access to. Like,
right.
Like going to concerts left and right and meeting some of the world's most iconic musicians and just being able to ask questions of people that I never imagined I could,
mm-hmm.
and getting information not just in the classroom but in every possible way, just absorbing every minute of it.
Wow, that's amazing. So we know you're performing Vivaldi this week, but do you have a piece or pieces that have grown to be your favorites to perform?
I'm sure you've probably heard this before of artists that you chat with, is that, you know, any piece that you're playing at the moment is your favorite one, you know, and I kind of agree with that and don't at the same time. The Vivaldi is a piece that gets audiences to leave their homes and come to the hall.
Right. It's familiar to audiences.
It's familiar to audiences. And I think that any time you can get audiences out of their house and come to the hall, it's an achievement.
Right, right.
And so in that sense, I love it, because music is about communing and bringing people together. I just played, for the first time since I was 12, a piece by Edouard Lalo, French composer, mm-hmm. the Symphonie Espagnole for
right.
violin and orchestra, and I just played that in California. It's a piece I hadn't played since I was 12. I hated it as a 12-year-old. I love it now. I can't wait to play it again.
It's grown on you.
It's grown on me. I mean, it's so it's one of those things where pieces, like books in a way, you can come to them at different points in your life and have different feelings about them. And, you know, you read something as a kid that was taught to you by a teacher you didn't like it. Then you came to it as an adult, you said, hey, that's a great piece of literature. And it's the same thing with music.
We talked about getting audiences to these performances. I understand you play a big role in social media with a Facebook page with over 50,000 followers. So
I think we're at 74,500.
Very nice. Yeah. Very nice. So what are some of the things you use your social media for to get audiences out into the concert halls?
Well, what I think has become a little bit, and I think a lot of it actually, is that folks want to get to know you off stage in order for them to commit to buying a ticket to come see you on stage.
Right.
And it didn't used to be that way. I think it used to be the reverse. It used to be, well, I want to hear the Beethoven Violin Concerto, and I don't care if Kermit the Frog or, you know, Giora Schmidt or whomever is playing it, I'm going to go buy a ticket for it.
Right, right.
Now, it's kind of similar to the way we act a little bit about the movies, where it's like, if you know Tom Hanks is in a movie, you like Tom Hanks, you're going to go see Tom Hanks because you know that he generally makes a good movie. And so I think what the Facebook page in particular does for me is it gives folks a chance to get to know who I am. And who I am is not just talking about myself the whole time. And I think I talk about stuff that I'm listening to, other artists that I think they should listen to, whether it's a beautiful painting that I saw, a great hip-hop group that I saw in the subway in New York.
Right.
Or, you know, a fantastic pianist that I heard, or a cow that's responding to a violin playing on a farm. Like comical stuff,
right.
serious stuff,
right.
emotional stuff, a whole variety of things, so that people see who I am as a person, and they say, I identify with what that guy is sharing,
mm-hmm.
and he includes us in the conversation. And what it's become, that page, is a global gathering place, really, for classical music lovers in all that represents. I've got, and what I love about it is that you can see the countries of which they're from.
Oh, wow. So you have followers from
all
over the world.
I've got people in Bahrain. I've got people in the Philippines. I've got people in Tuscaloosa. And I probably have some people here in Knoxville. I have to check.
Well, I'm sure you will after this week.
Yeah. So that's the fun part. Is that I can see, and I started the Facebook page in 2009 when people looked at me and were like, you're a classical musician that actually we don't know so well on the concert stage, but we're getting to know you on the Facebook page.
Right.
And now they're coming to me and they say, hey, we've known you on Facebook and now we're coming to see you in the shows. And I'm like, yes, it's working. It took 7 years, but it's good to see you. You know, classical music is a slow-moving ship, but we're kind of coming along. You know?
I agree. And as a classical musician myself, I've noticed a trend of incorporating new music into concert programs in an effort to pull in younger audiences. But this work by Vivaldi we're going to hear this week is almost 300 years old. So And what ways do you think you can continue to make music like this fun or even relevant for younger audiences?
Well, I think that's a great question. And I think one of the ways that we can keep this music relevant and refreshing is to not take it so seriously and to understand that it's not something that's meant to be in a glass box.
Right.
And I think if folks can see that it's a living, breathing thing, that we're living, breathing people that are just kind of presenting it to them, that they can come touch, see, feel, hear, smell, taste, all of that stuff in the hall, that it's not going to sound as stale as something that's 300 years old. Because if somebody said, here, you want a 300-year-old loaf of bread, you'd be like, get that out of here.
Right.
But if you put it in some pretty wrapping and kind of make it sexy and think, oh, there's some fresh seasoning on top, but it's still the same loaf of bread, you might be interested.
So we should expect a very sexy rendition of the
Four Seasons.
There
might be some sexiness, I'm not going to lie. But, you know, there's going to be some, I try to put some fresh seasoning on there, maybe a little Creole, a little barbecue, you know. And that's part of the things that come in the moment of live performance, which is what I try to get people to understand, is that when you listen to a CD or when you're listening to the radio, and I listen to a lot of radio at home, and it's wonderful, and I listen in the car, and but when you go to the hall and you see the performers' facial expressions while they're doing it, mm-hmm. and there's a smile between, let's say, the soloist and the conductor, or the bassoon player and the conductor, because a passage that happened just right at that moment, you can't see that on a CD at home.
Right.
And you can't experience that even on YouTube. But you can experience that in the hall.
Yeah.
You can feel that. And that is, I think, a contagious thing that will get people to come back.
Well, Gior, thank you for being here with
Pleasure.
Us. You can hear Gior Schmidt perform as featured violinist in Vivaldi's The Four Seasons tonight and tomorrow night with the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra at the Tennessee Theater. Information on tickets, Gior Schmidt, or the Knoxville Symphony Orchestra can be found at knoxvillesymphony.com.